Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, Section A, State and Local News, for Friday, July 21st, 2023. Craddock sparks to fight for more MISD funding. Midland ISD provided more protection from fiscal cliff. Representatives to fight for formula transition grant extension by Stuart Doreen. The so-called fiscal cliff Midland ISD officials have talked about will be delayed by at least 2 years. Officials in State Representative Tom Craddock's office confirmed that legislation passed during the second special session called by Governor Greg Abbott will ensure Midland ISD does not lose formula transition grant money for at least 2 years. That grant funding was expected to expire after the 2023-24 school year. During the 2022-23 school year, formula transition grant funding for Midland ISD was $53.344 million. The next closest districts were Houston ISD at $39.571 million and Carrollton Farmers Branch ISD $23.173 million. Craddock's office also stated that Midland's state representative still plans to fight for language during a future special session that is similar to a Craddock-authored amendment to the House Bill 100 that would have allowed Midland ISD to receive that transition grant funding through 2030. In April, the Texas House passed House Bill 100. However, the legislation died during negotiations over school finance with the Texas Senate. Not only has Craddock stated his intent to put language into whatever school funding bill lawmakers pass, but State Senator Kevin Sparks, Republican of Midland, told the Reporter Telegram in a statement he is committed to fighting for the same transition funding requirements for Midland ISD. For too long, Midland ISD has gotten the short end of the stick when it comes to formula funding for our schools, Sparks wrote. Accordingly, I was happy to raise awareness of this issue in the Senate and help craft language for a remedy that guaranteed transition funding for Midland ISD. Unfortunately, House Bill 100 did not pass, but I fully commit to fighting for the same transition funding requirements for Midland ISD for any relevant school funding bill that is debated and any of the anticipated special sessions we will have. During the regular session, we were able to convince both House and Senate members that this transition funding was necessary, and I do not think that line of thinking has changed in either chamber. So I am optimistic that we will be able to secure additional transition funding for all schools negatively affected. What is the formula transition grant about anyway? The Texas School Coalition reported that when legislators approved House Bill 3 in 2019, they enacted formula transition grants to ensure that all districts would receive at least a 3% increase in per-student funding. The grants went to districts that would otherwise see little or no increase. Our values grew so much in that 2019-20 school year, more than 40%, Midland ISD's Chief Financial Officer Daryl Dodds has previously stated. That was the reason for the growth from the formula transition grant. If that funding disappears, it would likely result in severe cuts or district officials having to call a tax ratification election to make up some of that revenue, Midland ISD leaders have stated previously. Some Midland ISD leaders have referred to the threat of losing these funds as a fiscal cliff. Five-star food, people at Fuoco, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Determination comes naturally to the Jha family. After moving to Dallas from Sicily in 1999, the family joined some cousins who owned a restaurant called Alfredo's, cooking up a lineage of recipes and learning Texas slang. Yet Bess, Blairton, and their father wanted to do something for themselves, so they moved out west to Big Spring, where they co-owned and operated with an uncle, Joe's, for 13 years. Once they decided to go their separate ways, the trio found the 4610 North Garfield Street location, inside Colonnade at Polo Park, and decided Midland needed Fuoco Italian. It was always a dream of ours to own something, Bess, owner and chef of Fuoco, said. My dad worked a long time for my cousins and everyone else, so it was time that he gets to live his dream. Only a few weeks stood between the family and opening. A couple pizza oven additions here and dough mixers there was all they needed to turn the former Labrado location into a full-functioning Italian kitchen. Now, from open to close, 7 days a week, Bess, Blairton, and Mr. Jha worked tirelessly preparing made-fresh daily ingredients and menu items for guests. The hardest part? Learning where each ingredient can be found in the walk-in cooler. Starting from scratch in a restaurant, it's hard in the kitchen. Until you memorize where everything is, you have to take like 10 trips to the walk-in cooler to get something, Bess joked. If you don't remember, then you just go in and get stuck in there looking for things. It's like a needle in a haystack, especially when it's busy and you're tired. You're thinking about what you're doing over here, what you left up here, trying to find something else in there. But now I think we've got a handle on it. Only a week into their endeavor, the restaurant has been full nearly every lunch and dinner rush. However, Bess said the customers make the struggle all worth it. With patience and grace offered so far by most of the Midland community, Bess said the family has been able to focus on perfecting their routines and patterns around the kitchen while still being able to deliver delectable dishes. Fuoco is currently BYOB, but should have a license soon. They will serve wine and beer. Operating hours run from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Sunday through Thursday, and 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday, 4610 North Garfield Street, Suite D4. Hot Bites. Although the menu at Fuoco is stacked with choices, I was still able to find some standout favorites. Bruschetta, light and fresh slices of baguette topped with juicy cherry tomatoes, capers, and feta felt like a flavorful explosion. The six pieces are perfect for a table of 2 to 4, 8 out of 10. Caesar and house salads, both made with romaine and or iceberg. The Caesar and house salads are the perfect example of what a good pre-meal salad should be, finely chopped and crisp. The Caesar dressing displayed the perfect balance of tart and creamy, while the house salad came topped with tomatoes, pepperoncini, cucumbers, and cheese. 8 out of 10. Fettuccine Alfredo with chicken. I don't know how you make a cream and cheese-based dish taste light, but the Jha family has mastered the craft. When I say I couldn't put my fork down, I mean it. Chewy al dente pasta laid as the base, while the Alfredo sauce coated the plate in a unique and peppery blanket. 10 out of 10. Eggplant Parmesan. In my experience, restaurants will usually coat the eggplant in sauce, making the breaded crust soggy. However, Fuoco lays its eggplant pieces to the side, ultimately keeping the perfect crispy outside, soft inside combination desired for eggplant eaters. The spaghetti runs thin and long, while the marinara sauce showcases more flavors than just tomato and pepper. 10 out of 10. Chocolate mousse cake. Rich, airy, and ice cold, this large slice of cake was the perfect ending to an already impressive meal. 9 out of 10. Other dishes include lobster ravioli, veal-based meals, and much more. Overall vibes? Classic Italian bistro tunes play through the space while minimalist art and deco fill the open areas. Two larger sections with big, long tables for parties can be found in both the front and back, and although both tables were filled during my visit, the high ceilings allow sound to escape, making it easy to still hear and talk to the people at my table. However, the real stars of the show are Baz Blairton and Mr. Ja. They care about their craft and are dedicated to creating meals that appeal to the customers but still honor their family. Honest and hardworking, the Fuoco family, from the kitchen to the front of house, are courteous, humble, and grateful for their opportunity to show Midlanders a taste of Sicily. To not try Fuoco would be a major mistake. Industry, Foundation Philanthropy Make Midland Exceptional by Stuart Doreen. On Wednesday, Midlanders were reminded of what makes our community exceptional. The University of Texas Permian Basin will offer its students wanting to earn a master's degree in clinical psychology, social work, or counseling the opportunity to do so for free. It is an incredible gesture made possible by the generosity and targeted philanthropy of the Scarborough Foundation and Permian Strategic Partnership. Both foundations will each donate $5 million for the program, one with a very hopeful outcome. The recipients of the scholarship will agree to remain in the Permian Basin and work in our wonderful new Behavioral Health Center or other mental health areas in our community. UT Permian Basin President Sandra Woodley said, "Targeted philanthropy is something with a long history in Midland, but it seems we have taken it to another level in recent times. Earlier this month, the J.E. and L.E. Mabee Foundation announced a $25 million gift to the Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center. With this extraordinary gift, the Mabee Foundation has made a profound statement about the importance of bringing high-quality behavioral health services to the Permian Basin," said Russell Myers, president of the PBBHC. "We are incredibly grateful to receive this grant, placing us one giant step closer to providing this much-needed service to the residents of our region." Philanthropic leaders like the Scarborough Foundation, FMH Foundation, Beale Foundation, Permian Strategic Partnership, and Diamondback Energy had previously been praised for efforts that helped make the Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center a reality. The more, the merrier indeed. Other recent targeted donations involving the Permian Strategic Partnership and Scarborough Foundation included partnering with the Holdsworth Center to provide leadership training of public school officials across the Permian Basin. Both also provided $10 million grants for the construction of a $30 million home for the new Pre-K Academy and Early Childhood Education Program. There are other examples throughout the years involving other projects and other donors, too numerous to name. "I recall targeted philanthropy helping Midland ISD out of a multi-million dollar deficit and helping the district with sky-high rents for its teachers and staff. I remember targeted giving, including Clarence Scarborough Jr.'s $25 million donation, complementing a successful bond initiative to make Midland Memorial Hospital's patient tower even more responsive for the needs of Midland. I know the benefit that donors like the Abel Hanger Foundation have made for students wanting to guarantee a college education for anyone interested in seeing what's possible. There are some, including a few elected officials, who prefer that foundations and industry stay in their lane until summoned by government when needed. That is not going to cut it in the Midland I know. Education, healthcare, infrastructure, and quality of life will not be everything it can be without the targeted philanthropy of industry and foundations often leading the way. We see it again and again. More is coming, but it is not my place to steal anybody's spotlight. Thank you to the Permian Strategic Partnership, the Scarborough Foundation, the Mabee Foundation, for your recent reminders of what helps make Midland one of the most unique places in the state of Texas. Your donations help make our community and region that much more exceptional. MISD admin invited to D.C. to discuss teacher shortages. Associate Superintendent to meet with Departments of Education, Labor, by Stuart Doreen. The United States Department of Education has invited Midland ISD Associate Superintendent Ashley Osborne to attend a groundbreaking meeting in Washington, D.C. next week, according to the district. The joint meeting will focus on the creation of registered apprenticeships for educators to address the persistent issue of teacher shortages. Teacher shortages have emerged as a pressing challenge, impacting school districts nationwide, including West Texas, the district said in the news release. To tackle the issue head-on, the Department of Education and Department of Labor initiated a partnership to explore innovative solutions through registered apprenticeships for teachers. These apprenticeships would allow teacher apprentices to earn a good wage while learning the on-the-job skills necessary to provide a quality education. Associate Superintendent Osborne said, "I am thrilled to have the opportunity to be a part of this conversation." Osborne will be joined by senior leaders from both agencies, key stakeholders, educational leaders, and experts to design a framework for registered apprenticeships tailored to the unique needs of teaching, the district stated. The meeting aims to identify best practices, establish guidelines, and explore funding options to ensure the success and sustainability of apprenticeships. By engaging in this collaborative effort, Midland ISD is demonstrating our commitment to finding proactive solutions to the teacher shortages, Osborne said. The meeting provides MISD the opportunity to play a pivotal role in shaping policies that will impact the future of education. The meeting is set for July 27th at the U.S. Department of Education. Laredo Folktales on display at the Museum of the Southwest by Morgan Taylor Thomas. I've seen my fair share of exhibitions, events, and installations at the Museum of the Southwest, but I've never experienced one encompassing as much love and eeriness as Cantado Mi Alma. Created by Angelica Raquel, Cantado Mi Alma retells folk tales passed down to the Laredo native from her family. However, many of these stories include brujas, witches, death, and darkness. Yet the playful, vibrant colors mask the morbid elements with a childlike expression reminiscent of a lifetime of memories. This exhibition title is also a very special phrase when I grew up, saying it quite often. But as people ebbed and flowed from my life, I forgot it, Raquel explained during the museum member preview party Tuesday night. It wasn't until recently, as I was thinking about this exhibition and the work that would be going in, the content and contents of the wars, stories, and memories of my family, that the phrase came back to me. I used to say, "I love you, Cantado Mi Alma," which translates to, "I love you with all of my soul." It was more powerful than all of my heart because the soul is an upper essence of who we are as people, beyond just that feeling of love. Divided into three sections, the exhibit moves from Raquel's early memories into becoming the next matriarchal family figure and finishes off with representations of the most recent. However, one of the most interesting stories comes from a mysterious West Texas legend. Dogman of Laredo. While her uncle, a police officer, was patrolling one night, he saw a pack of stray dogs funneling into the road. Making sure to drive slowly and carefully with the animals, he followed them to their gathering spot. In his headlights, he saw a particularly large dog sitting on the curb like a human, speaking to the listening pack of strays. Once the creature spotted Raquel's uncle, it stood upright and ran away on its hind legs. The dogman comes from long ago in Laredo, when a suffering homeless man who lived downtown, which fans along the Rio Grande and borders Mexico, was taken in and offered food, water, and shelter by a bruja. The catch? He had to do her bidding. One day, she asked him to steal a child for her, but the man could not find it in himself to go through with the request. To punish him, the bruja cursed him to be loyal like the dogs laying at her feet. Rumor has it the cursed spirit still roams the city and can often be seen crossing between Texas and Mexico. Overall, Contado Mi Alma is a must-see exhibition unlike anything ever showcased in Midland. The show will be on display until September 17th, 1705 West Missouri Avenue. Texas Rangers investigating officer-involved shooting by Mercedes Cordero. An officer-involved shooting took place Thursday morning, according to the Midland Police Department and City of Midland. MPD reported that at approximately 2:15 a.m. Thursday, officers with the Midland Police Department were involved in a vehicle pursuit that began at the intersection of West Wadley Avenue and North Loop 250 West after attempting to conduct a traffic stop for suspected street racing. The driver of one of the vehicles continued to westbound on State Highway 191 at a high rate of speed, MPD reported. The driver then made a U-turn and headed eastbound on State Highway 191. A supporting officer was out of his car to set spike strips in the roadway and noticed the vehicle heading toward him. The officer fired his weapon in the direction of the vehicle. The pursuit ended at the 5,000 block of Andrews Highway. No injuries were reported. The sole occupant of the stolen vehicle, a juvenile, was taken into custody and later transported to Barbara Culver Juvenile Center for evading and unauthorized use of a motor vehicle, according to MPD. As per department protocols, Texas Rangers are called lead investigative agencies on events involving shots fired by a police officer. Police continue to search for the second vehicle and suspect.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Odessa American for July 20th, 2023. Russia bombards Odessa and other southern Ukraine port cities for third night since end of grain deal by Associated Press, July 20th, 2023. Kiev, Ukraine, Russia pounded Ukraine's southern cities with drones and missiles for a third consecutive night Thursday, keeping Odessa in the Kremlin's crosshairs after a bitter dispute over the end of a wartime deal that allowed Ukraine to send grain through the key Black Seaport. The strikes killed at least two people in Odessa, in Mykolaiv, a city close to the Black Sea. At least 19 people were injured, including a child, Ukrainian officials said. Russia has targeted Ukrainian critical grain export infrastructure since it vowed retribution this week for an attack that damaged a crucial bridge between Russia and the Moscow-annexed Crimean Peninsula. Russian officials blamed that strike on Ukrainian drone boats. The strike on Ukraine's grain export infrastructure have helped drive up food prices in countries facing hunger. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the end of the deal Monday would result in more human suffering, with potentially millions of people affected. The grain deal provided guarantees that ships would not be attacking, entering, and leaving Ukrainian ports, while a separate agreement facilitated the movement of Russian food and fertilizer. The Russian military on Thursday described it strikes on Odessa, a city whose downtown area is described by the United Nations Cultural Agency, UNESCO, as possessing outstanding universal value as retaliatory. In January, UNESCO added Odessa's historic center to its list of endangered World Heritage Sites, with UNESCO Director General Audrey Azoulay saying the legendary port that has left its mark in cinema, literature, and the arts. despite multiple Russian artillery attacks and airstrikes during the war that began in February 2022, Odessa had not previously been subjected to the heavy barrages that have targeted other towns and cities in Ukraine, south and east. Odessa residents reeled from Russia's sudden focus on their city. "I remember the attack on the port last year, but now it feels like it was only 5% compared to what the Russians have launched at us during these past 3 days," Oleksandr Kolodin, a 29-year-old photographer, told the Associated Press. Some feared that Russia's decision to tear up the grain deal would make Odessa a long-term primary target. "We saw how they could attack Kyiv for an entire month," said 29-year-old programmer Victor, referring to the intense bombardment of the Ukrainian capital in May. He asked to use only his first name out of concern for his safety. The Russian Defense Ministry said in a statement that it targeted production shops and storage sites for unmanned boats in Odessa and the nearby city of Chornomorsk in the Mykolaiv area. The Russian military claimed to have destroyed Ukraine's fuel infrastructure facilities and ammunition depots. Neither side's claims could be independently verified. The previous night, an intense Russian bombardment using drones and missiles damaged critical port infrastructure in Odessa, including grain and oil terminals. The attack destroyed at least 60,000 tons of grain. In what appeared to be a tit-for-tat move, Ukraine's Defense Ministry announced that, as of Friday, all vessels in the Black Sea heading to Russian ports may be considered by Ukraine as such carrying military cargo with all the associated risks that may result in higher insurance costs for those ships. Russia's Defense Ministry said earlier this week that Moscow had formally declared wide areas of the Black Sea dangerous for shipping and warned that it would view any incoming ship as laden with weapons, effectively announcing a sea blockade. Despite the risk, ship owners haven't shown any less interest so far in carrying Ukrainian grain through the Black Sea, according to John Stoppert, senior manager of environment and trade for the International Chamber of Shipping, which represents 80% of the world's commercial fleet. The European Union's foreign affairs chief condemned Russia's targeting of grain storage facilities. More than 60,000 tons of grain has been burned, Joseph Borrell said in Brussels on Thursday regarding Moscow's recent tactics. So not only they withdraw from the grain agreement, but they are burning the grain. German Foreign Affairs Minister Annalena Baerbock said at the same time the meeting the UE is involved in international efforts to get Ukrainian grain to the world market. The fact that the Russian president has canceled the grain agreement and is now bombing the port of Odessa is not only another attack on Ukraine, but an attack on the people, on the poorest people in the world, she says. Hundreds of thousands of people, not to say millions, urgently need grain from Ukraine. The White House warned Wednesday that Russia was preparing possible attacks on civilian shipping vessels in the Black Sea. The warning could alarm shippers and further drive up grain prices. Russia has laid additional sea mines in the approaches to Ukrainian ports. White House National Secretary Councilman Spokesman Adam Hodge said in a statement, "We believe that this is a coordinated effort to justify any attacks against civilian ships in the Black Sea and lay blame on Ukraine for these attacks," the statement said. Carlos Mera, head of agricultural commodities markets, wheat prices have risen about 17% over the last week, calling it a surprising rise that started even before the grain deal ended Monday and attributing it to a little bit of panic. "A lot of the wheat exported from Ukraine goes to very poor countries, such as those in North Africa," he said. "People in those places are already struggling with food insecurity and high local food prices. Russia, meanwhile, has been exporting record amounts of wheat in recent months, despite complaints that its agricultural exports have been hindered. There is a vast list of underdeveloped countries that depend on Ukrainian and Russian wheat," Mera said. "And with prices going up, people will have to pay more for that wheat, which means more expensive bread in those countries." Russia has blasted Ukrainian towns and cities since the start of the war, Ukraine's Western allies have helped upgrade its air defense systems. The latest military aid package from the United States, announced by the Pentagon on Wednesday, includes funding for 4 National Advanced Surface-to-Air Missile Systems, or NASAMS, and munitions for them. Complex Community Federal Credit Union to provide 700 meals at literacy event. Complex Community Federal Credit Union, CCFCU, announced in a press release its sponsorship of the Woodson Boys and Girls Club Children Literacy and Reading Festival. The free community indoor event will be held on Saturday, July 22nd from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the Woodson Boys and Girls Club at 1037 East Murphy Street in Odessa. The Woodson Boys and Girls Club Literacy Event promises a fun-filled day for families and children of all ages. As part of CCFCU's commitment to supporting education and the community, they will be providing 700 meals to attendees, ensuring that families enjoy a delicious meal during the festivities. Attendees will also have the opportunity to participate in various engaging activities, including a backpack giveaway, free children's books, free food, free haircuts, and much more. We are thrilled to be a sponsor of the Woodson Boys and Girls Club Children Literacy and Reading Festival, said Jason Barrage, CEO at CCFCU, in the release. At Complex Community Federal Credit Union, we believe in supporting our community and empowering our youth with the tools they need to succeed. Education is the foundation for a brighter future, and the events like this play a crucial role in promoting literacy and inspiring a love for reading among children. For more information about the event, call 432-332-7891 or email woodson@basinkids.org. Da Vinci Robotic Simulator comes to MMH for free community event. Midland Memorial Hospital has scheduled a free community event that will provide guests with the opportunity to simulate what the surgeon would be doing during a surgical procedure. This free community event allows attendees to get behind the controls and test drive the Da Vinci surgical system. The event is scheduled from 10 a.m. to noon Monday, July 24th, in the Midland Memorial Hospital private dining room at 400 Rosalind Redfern Grover Parkway in Midland. Robotic-assisted surgery is changing the way complex surgeries are being performed. The Da Vinci robot enables surgeons to perform complex procedures with a minimally invasive approach. Engineering Camp aims to make STEM fun, by Ruth Campbell, July 20th. Making slime, lava lamps, elephant toothpaste, and 3D printing were just a few of the activities offered at University of Texas Permian Basin's Engineering Camp. There is a camp sponsored by XTO Energy and one by the U.S. Army. The one going on now is supported by the Army. UTPB Professor of Engineering George Nana said the camp is aimed at students in grades 9 through 12, but the Army made an exception for a couple of students who were not in that range. Thursday found the 18 campers making magnetic slime. Adam Zolba, who had many siblings attending the camp, said his favorite part so far was bacteria. We got some E. coli and we added some glow-in-the-dark matter so the E. coli can absorb the matter, and next week we shall see it glow in the dark, Adam said. Michael Tadlock is attending the camp from Post. He has been interested in engineering since the 6th or 7th grade. I think it's been really good, Tadlock said of the camp. I like all the teachers and how they're really interacting with all the classes. There's really a lot to learn. It's really easy to get along with everyone and all the teachers. He said this was a chance to see if he really wants to pursue the field before going to college. It's been really eye-opening, Tadlock said. Terrell Henderson, who attends George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa, was there with his sister Zorian. I liked it. I've enjoyed it. I've been here once before last year, and I liked it. I wanted to go back and enjoy it one more time. There's lots of cool people that you meet here from other places and other schools as well. You have fun. You have interaction with the teachers as well as experiments. It really helps a lot, Henderson said. Selma, who attends Odessa Collegiate Academy, and Sarah Zoba, who goes to Wilson and Young Medal of Honor Middle School, were diligently mixing their slime to be the right consistency. "I really like that it's hands-on," Selma said. "I'm a visual learner. Doing hands-on activities really sets the information, and that's what I've really liked about this camp. Plus, they gave me $400, so they're literally paying me to learn, which I think is really nice." Each student in 9th through 12th grade for the U.S. Army-sponsored camp will receive $400 for the four-week program. Sarah likes the camp because they learn something new every day. "I just like coming here, meeting new people, learning new things," Sarah said. Narendra Bapana, a lecturer at UTPB, was keeping students busy. He's enjoying the expressions on the campers' faces, like right now, how they're playing. They mostly like seeing explosions, such as the lava lamp he made last week, pop rockets, and elephant toothpaste, Bapana said. "We're doing fun activities, but at the same time, we're teaching them science, most importantly, and exciting them about what engineers do. That's something I really enjoy. You're teaching them, but in a fun way," Bapana said. Nana said he thinks the camp has gone well this year. "One of the main differences between this year or last year is that I expanded it to include professors from the sciences," he added. They included math, biology, physics, and the Office of Innovation and Commercialization in employing a makerspace. There are roughly 10 professors involved. "As word gets out about the camp, they are drawing more students." Nana said they are starting late this year, but still attracted 18 students. The target was 23. "That shows that there is interest, and one of the students is from out of town and is also participating," Nana said. He added that they are planning to have a separate workshop for teachers and counselors. "I think that will have a multiplicative effect on the students because the knowledge the teachers and the counselors will gain, they'll be able to spread across the student population. But we want to engage the teachers, so that they will be able to encourage the students in the area of STEM," Nana said. They also had Cameron Wesson, communications and recruitment specialist, give a presentation. Nana said he invited a representative from admissions and financial aid to talk to the students Friday. Last week, they had a representative from the Army. He said this gives students a chance to explore the Army and explore the linkage between STEM or science, technology, engineering, and math to the Army, because sometimes there's a misconception that the Army is just about the battlefield, Nana said. He added that they are trying to connect the Army Corps of Engineers, water treatment, and cybersecurity. First offshore wind leases off the Texas coast offered for bidding. The federal government on Thursday announced the first ever chance for companies to lease areas in the Gulf of Mexico to build wind farms, including two parcels roughly 30 miles off the Texas coast near Galveston. Renewable energy developers will likely compete for the leases with firms that are better known for another kind of offshore construction. Oil and gas giants such as Shell and Total Energies qualified to join the bidding. Leaders of the traditionally fossil-fueled-focused companies say their climate goals make investing in offshore wind critical. Both businesses are already involved in developing wind power in the Atlantic, including near New Jersey, New York, and Massachusetts. The auction will take place August 29th, and the highest bidders will win the leases. After that, putting together the construction and operation plans will likely take years. Environmental advocates, fishermen, and other energy companies all have a stake in what happens. When they're built, the wind turbines could feed energy into the Texas power grid. Companies suggest the energy could also be used to produce hydrogen, which in turn could fuel planes or long-haul trucks. The leases are expected to be able to generate some 3.7 gigawatts of power, or enough for almost 1.3 million homes. Along with the leases near Texas, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management offered a site for wind power to be built off the coast of Louisiana. The Gulf parcels will add to the few dozen active commercial leases federal officials already issued, most recently near California. They've approved 3 commercial-scale projects for construction so far. By catalyzing the offshore wind energy potential of the Gulf of Mexico, we can tackle the climate crisis, lower energy costs for families, and create good-paying jobs, U.S. Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland said in a statement. Offshore wind turbines can help countries transition to using more clean energy and slow human-caused climate change, which has been spurred by the burning of fossil fuels. But building and operating wind farms in the Gulf comes at an environmental cost. The huge turbines will harm wildlife, such as the billions of migratory birds that cross the Gulf and might crash into blades, while the boats involved in the initial construction could strike endangered turtles and whales. Environmental groups are pushing for developers to lessen the damage as much as possible, perhaps by limiting ships' speeds during construction and posting lookouts to help prevent collisions with animals. The leases don't stipulate exactly how wildlife will be protected. Those decisions will come as companies develop the construction plans, which federal officials will review. We don't ever want to hide from the fact that this is still heavy industrial development, said Helen Rose Patterson, who focuses on offshore wind energy for the National Wildlife Federation. But I think we always turn back to the biggest challenge that all of those species and habitats are facing is climate change. Federal officials balanced input from fishermen on offering the leases to meeting with stakeholders as they whittled down the lease areas from a broad swath of ocean that they initially considered to a pair of sites covering roughly 100,000 acres each. The process was based on rigorous science to avoid interfering with other industries and the Gulf's natural resources, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management's regional director for the Gulf of Mexico, Michael Salata, wrote in an internal memo. Shrimpers asked the government to avoid blocking their most productive fishing areas, which officials largely did. Commercial and recreational fishermen, meanwhile, see a benefit to building turbines in the Gulf because they expect red snapper and other fish will be attracted to the turbine foundations, as they are with oil rigs. Buddy Gwendon, a Galveston-based commercial fisherman who also owns a restaurant, considered this future from his bustling seafood market on a recent morning as men unloaded thousands of pounds of glistening, chilled red snapper caught over a 5-day fishing trip. Gwendon said that he and the other fishermen feel hopeful that the new wind turbines could boost their businesses, since many of the oil rigs they used to fish around were removed during the West Texas fracking boom. Scott Hickman, who leads fishing charter trips from Galveston, said building more structures in the Gulf means there's going to be more opportunity to catch fish. And he sees a second reward that wind energy could bring. Sustainable energy will mitigate the impacts of climate change that he already sees affecting fish populations in the Gulf. We've got to do something about climate, Hickman said. We're super supportive. Catherine Kirk named TXCPA Rising Star. Whitley Penn tax partner Catherine Kirk has been named as a 2023 Texas Society of Certified Public Accountants, or TXCPA, Rising Star. A Thursday press release said Kirk was honored at the TXCPA Awards luncheon June 23rd. The annual TXCPA Rising Star Award recognizes a TXCPA member at the age of 40 and under, who has demonstrated exemplary leadership skills and active involvement in TXCPA, the accounting profession, and his or her local communities. Kirk has more than 17 years of tax experience as the third-generation tax-certified public accountant, or CPA. She advises clients to entity information and selection for best possible income tax savings while coordinating with legal advisors. Kirk also provides guidance on business structure, annual state and federal income tax, annual tax planning, and estate and inheritance planning. She helps guide clients to success through general business consulting to gain efficiencies and profitability through operations and financial reporting. She is experienced in merger and acquisition transactions for multiple industries, including oil and gas service companies. Kirk primarily serves clients in the oil and gas service, energy, ranching, financial investing, professional service, retail, and healthcare industries. From forming a new business to selling an established business, Kirk advises business owners on their tax needs throughout transitions. Kirk is a member of Texas State Board of Public Accountancy, or TSBPA, American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, AICPA, and the 2018 Class of Leadership Odessa. She currently serves as the treasurer for the Midland Odessa Business Estate Council, or MOBEC. Additionally, she periodically speaks to local high schools and college students on financial literacy skills to help them build a successful life, regardless of their career paths or plans. Kirk received her BBA and MS in accounting from Texas Tech University. Catherine's growth serves as a shining example of how our young leaders skillfully balance their professional advancement with making a positive impact on their community. Her invaluable contributions to our tax team makes her an indispensable asset, and I am overjoyed that the community recognizes and appreciates her exceptional qualities, stated Stephen Jeffcoat, tax partner and Permian Basin market leader in the release. Landgraf, Texas-sized tax cuts. On June 27th, the Texas legislature convened at the Texas Capitol building for a special legislative session called by Governor Abbott to specifically address property tax relief. The result? We fulfilled our promise to put money back in the pockets of hardworking Texas taxpayers. In fact, we took the largest budget surplus in Texas history and turned it into the largest tax cut in Texas history, not only cutting property taxes, but the franchise tax as well. Yes, everything is bigger in Texas, including our tax cuts. As your state representative, I proudly co-authored legislation which will provide $12.7 billion of property tax relief for Texans combined with other tax relief measures. The total will be closer to $18 billion. The benefits of this legislation, which was approved by the Texas legislature last week, will be far-reaching, positively impacting Texas families and small businesses alike. The legislative package includes House Joint Resolution 2, Senate Bill 2, and Senate Bill 3, Senate Bill 2, and Senate Bill 3 must now be signed by Governor Abbott to go into law, while H.J.R. 2, which provides the constitutional authority necessary to enact several provisions of SB 2, must be approved by Texas voters in November. SB 2 increases the homestead exemption from $40,000 to $100,000 and taps surplus revenue to provide $12.7 billion in property tax relief over the next 2 years by reducing school district maintenance and operations M&O tax rates by 10.7 cents per $100 of taxable value to buy down school districts' M&O rates. Additionally, SB 2 creates a 20% appraisal cap applicable for tax years 2024, 2025, and 2026 for non-homestead properties with an appraised value of $5 million or less. Note the current 10% appraisal cap that applies to your homestead remains in place. Importantly, SB 2 also increases the number of directors on an appraisal district's board of directors from 5 to 9, and 3 of them must be directly elected by voters in counties with 75,000 or more residents, which includes Ector County. SB 2 and HJR 2 provide immediate relief and lasting reform. We're not just using surplus revenue to buy down property taxes for the next 2 years. We're seeking to permanently amend the Constitution to increase the homestead exemption by 150%. Not only that, but the changes made to appraisal boards will add much-needed transparency and accountability. Appraisers have a major role in determining how much Texans have to pay in property taxes, and anyone with that amount of power should have to be elected by the people. SB 3 increases the no-tax-due threshold for franchise tax purposes to $2.47 million, ensuring businesses operating in Texas with revenue under this figure in a given tax year do not owe any franchise tax or have to file a franchise tax report. The current statutory no-tax-due threshold is $1 million. I am certainly proud of the significant reform to the franchise tax made by SB 3. However, I would have liked to see a larger cut and a plan to phase out and repeal the tax. The franchise tax is a bad policy that hurts Texas businesses and our economy because it is levied irrespective of whether businesses make a profit. For that reason, I filed HB 2213 earlier this year to repeal the franchise tax altogether. Even though I'm not totally satisfied, cutting the franchise tax by doubling the no-tax-due threshold is a huge step in the right direction and a very good thing for Texas. What we achieved over the past few weeks is a transformative and will herald unprecedented tax relief for Texans. I thank Governor Abbott for his leadership in prioritizing property tax relief for the people of Texas and for working hand-in-hand with Speaker Phelan and the Texas House of Representatives to get it done. And while I am certainly proud of these historic tax cuts, you have my word that I will continue to work to provide even more property tax relief moving forward. God bless Texas. MISD administrator invited to D.C. to discuss teacher shortages. The U.S. Department of Education has invited Midland ISD Associate Superintendent Ashley Osborne to attend a groundbreaking meeting in Washington, D.C. next week. The meeting is set for July 27th at the U.S. Department of Education in Washington, D.C. The joint meeting will focus on the creation of registered apprenticeship for educators to address the persistent issue of teacher shortages. Osborne was previously executive director of talent development at Ector County ISD. Teacher shortages have emerged as a pressing challenge impacting school districts nationwide, including West Texas. To tackle the issue head-on, the Department of Education and Department of Labor initiated a partnership to explore innovative solutions through registered apprenticeships for teachers. A news release said these apprenticeships would allow teacher apprentices to earn a good wage while learning the on-the-job skills necessary to provide a good quality education. I'm thrilled to have the opportunity to be a part of this conversation, said Associate Superintendent Osborne, who brings extensive experience, dedication, and education to the meeting. Osborne will be joined by senior leaders from both agencies, key stakeholders, educational leaders, and experts to design a framework for registered apprenticeships tailored to the unique needs of teaching. The meeting aims to identify best practices, establish guidelines, and explore funding options to ensure the success and sustainability of apprenticeships. By engaging in this collaborative effort, Midland ISD is demonstrating our commitment to finding proactive solutions to the teacher shortages, said Osborne. The meeting provides MISD the opportunity to play a pivotal role in shaping policies that will impact the future of education. Murder suspect rearrested. An Odessa man indicted last August on a murder charge was rearrested Wednesday on a warrant issued when authorities said he was caught hiking in Big Spring National Park. According to court records, Craig Vaughn Bowers, 36, shot and killed Mauricio Eslalis on April 24, 2022, and was indicted 4 months later. He was released from the Ector County Jail after posting bond and told he could travel no more than 150 miles outside the county and only for his job. Court documents indicate Bowers was stopped at the border checkpoint south of Marathon at the U.S. Border Patrol on July 9th. He told agents he was hiking in Big Bend National Park. Bowers is now being held without bond. According to Ector County Sheriff's Office report, deputies received a call April 24, 2022, about a shooting in the 12,000 block of West 16th Street. When they arrived, they found Islas mortally wounded. During the subsequent investigation, investigators learned that Islas had driven his vehicle through a fence on Tim Tam Circle and ended up in a pasture. According to the report, Islas called his cousin and asked for help, and Craig Vaughn Bowers Jr. called 911 after arriving home and finding the fence damaged and Islas' vehicle in his pasture. According to the report, Bowers retrieved a handgun from his glove box and waited for deputies to arrive. In the meantime, Islas walked over to Bowers, and the two began fighting. During the fight, three of Islas' relatives arrived, and two of them tried to pull Bowers off Islas, who was on the ground, according to the report. A cousin of Islas told investigators that after they'd pulled Bowers off of Islas, he saw Bowers pull a gun from his waistband and then heard a loud bang. The report stated, he saw Islas had been shot, and he and another cousin fought with Bowers and retrieved the gun from him. Bowers admitted to having a gun but denied pulling the trigger, the report said. New teacher welcome event coming up. Complete with plenty of swag, food, and door prizes, among other things, the Odessa Chamber of Commerce's new teacher welcome event is coming up July 31st. It will run from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. and take up several ballrooms at the MCM Grand Fun Dome at 6201 Business I-20. It started in 2014 at the request of then-Superintendent Tom Crow, who felt that a collaboration between the chamber, business community, and the district to welcome new teacher hires to Odessa was a win-win. Carla Hartwig, events and program specialist at the chamber, said they ordered 300 gifts. Hartwood said the event, which started out as a breakfast, is beneficial to the teachers and business community. We have our members who have purchased booths to be there to talk about their product, their services, and these are new teachers that they're touching, Hartwood said. She added that these new people are going to be looking for dentists, insurance agents, and entertainment for their families. You're new to town. You need to know what you need to know. All the ins and outs of who is who and what is what, so it's beneficial for them as well, the chamber members, because they get potentially new business, new clients from these new teachers. And then it's just our way of giving back and helping the district as we welcome these new people into our town. We want to be as welcoming as we can, arms wide open. That was something that Thomas Crow, when Mike George was still president and CEO of the chamber, he's the one that came to Mike. Mike just said, well, that's a win-win for us and our members. That's why we started doing it, and it's been very successful. It's grown exponentially every year. We probably get one or two more booths. We definitely ran out of room at Barn G. We were busting at the seams as it was pre-COVID. Talks were already in the works of where we can move after Barn G because it's just getting so big, which is a good thing, Hartwood said. This year, there will be 52 vendor booths, and last year, there were 50, she added. The chamber's core sponsors, which is platinum sponsors, sponsor every chamber scheduled chamber event. So we walk in with 26 sponsors already on the books, and then we just market from there to get the rest of them, Hartwig said. Typically, Superintendent Scott Murray welcomes everyone. There will be likely an ECISD board member who speaks, and Hartwig said she is working to get another elected official to attend. Chamber President and CEO Renee Earls will speak, and Chamber Chair Grayson Hankings. From the initial conversation with ECISD in February, it took about 6 months to organize the welcome event. We're still taking sponsors as they come in. It's a good 5-6 month process just from the initial conversation today of, Hartwood said. Along with their goodies, teachers will get heavy hors d'oeuvres, tea, and lemonade. There are going to be door prizes, Hartwood said. Most of the vendors donate door prizes, so there will be drawings throughout the 2-hour event. Usually we save a big one for last. That can either be $250 or $500. Gift card to be used to purchase supplies for your room, that sort of thing. None of them walk away empty-handed. We bought rolling carts this year, like the kind you get from the Office Depot, a little cube cart, Harkwood said. That there's gifts this year, that is all thanks to Chevron. Chevron totally underwrote this gift, and they have since day one. Chevron has been presenting sponsors since 2014. Their support is what has helped us build this year to year. But this year, we increased our ask, and they didn't bat an eye because they're all about education. That's one sector of our community that they really support, she added. Complex Community Federal Credit Union has been one of the biggest sponsors of the event since it was born in Barn G. They always served coffee for the morning event, but since this is afternoon, they will be offering tea and lemonade. There also will be a welcome committee, probably including Murray's top executives and some members of the board of directors, welcoming teachers as they walk in. They will be holding signs with encouraging messages. Hartwood said she's working to get cheerleaders and or mascots from some of the schools, but it's still summertime, so school hasn't started yet. It's a good event. We get a lot of feedback. We get thank you cards from the campuses from individual teachers themselves. Every year we receive praise, and we're not doing it for the praise. We're doing it for them. We want them to feel welcome to Odessa because without them, there would be... Where would our kiddos be? We need these teachers. I know everybody is feeling the pinch of not having enough teachers in their district, so we just want to make sure the ones that we get, they're happy when they get here, and we keep them happy. Just make them feel welcome, Hartwood said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.